I'm going to call the remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is February 3rd, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance of Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
Good morning, all. Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bolden?
Present.
Representative Hewitt? Representative Mecklen?
Present.
Representative Olson?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
Representative Hewitt?
Present.
All members are present.
Thank you. We have a quorum and we can proceed. Representative Elkins, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I will move their approval.
Okay. All those in favor of the minutes as presented for January 27th, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The minutes stand approved as written. Thank you so much. Today, we're going to spend all of our time on the topic of annexation. And it's one which I know I don't know a whole lot about. And there was a case before the Minnesota Supreme Court last year. So right now, hopefully there's nothing happening, and I thought it would give us an opportunity to really delve into this. And we're very pleased to have with us Judge Jenny Starr. She's a Chief Administrator Law Judge. And then we'll have two people for questions as well. Jessica Palmer-Denick, who's an administrative judge, and then Star Holman, she has a marvelous title, Municipal Boundary Adjustment Unit Administrator. So that takes up the whole card. And Judge Starr, if you would identify yourself and proceed. And again, thank you so much for being here.
Madam Chair, representatives, thank you so much for having us here today. I'm just going to take a quick second here to share my screen and hope that I, you know, don't have technical difficulties doing that.
So far, so good.
Okay, are those up for you? Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so I am Chief Administrative Law Judge Jenny Starr at the Office of Administrative Hearings. And as you said, I'm joined by Judge Palmer-Denick and Star Holman. Now, Star Holman's phone number and email address are here on the slide because she is, quite frankly, the star of the Boundary Adjustments Unit. She knows it all. And while I'm going to give a quick overview today, I'll definitely be relying on Star and Judge Palmer-Denick for support in answering your questions. I thought we'd start with just a brief overview of the Office of Administrative Hearings. In case you're not familiar with our work and our place in the executive branch, then we'll talk about boundary adjustments in general, and then move to the specific topic of annexations. So if you don't know the Office of Administrative Hearings, there are three courts in the executive branch, the Tax Court, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and the Office of Administrative Hearings. We're the largest of those three with 60 full-time equivalents. About half of our employees are employed as a judge. We have locations both in St. Paul and Duluth, and we serve the entire state of Minnesota. We render justice through fair, timely, and impartial administrative hearings, and we are particularly proud of the high-quality dispute resolution services that we offer. And I'll touch on that a little bit with regard to annexations. We provide services across a broad jurisdiction. So we are the trial level court for all workers' compensation cases that are tried or contested. We also oversee administrative law. So these are the kinds of cases, for example, when a Minnesotan is concerned about the choice that a state regulator has made, maybe with regard to a personal or professional license, for example, they can bring their case to the Office of Administrative Hearings to be heard. We also play an important role in rulemaking. And of course, we're here today to talk about boundary adjustments. Our funding comes from three sources. About 80% of our funding comes from the Workers' Compensation Fund. This is a revolving fund that supports our workers' compensation work. And then we do bill for some of our time in the administrative law division, and that supports 15% of our funding. Only 7% of our funding comes from the general fund. And of note, only $263,000 comes to us a year for the specific purpose of municipal boundary adjustments. So we spread those dollars in as an efficient and effective way as we can to make sure that we serve the state well in boundary adjustment matters. Now, turning to boundary adjustments in general, I just think it's important to note that the legislature was very clear in Minnesota Chapter 414 of the purpose and goals behind boundary adjustment work. And in particular, this legislature recognizes the importance of both incorporated and unincorporated areas across Minnesota and the balance and purpose that both of those kinds of areas provide to the state. So in other words, state law works to protect the stability of unincorporated areas for purposes of agriculture, open space, rural residential purposes, and also promotes municipal government for areas of intensive residential, commercial, or industrial use. Now, there's a number of types of boundary adjustments. Annexation is just one of those. So there's also, annexation is about when property from a town is made part of a city, just one of five types of municipal boundary adjustment matters that come to OAH. Detachment is generally when property from a city is made part of a town. And then there's also the creation of a city, incorporation, when two or more cities are combined, consolidation, and when an existing city is dissolved or dissolution. Now, in all of these matters, there's a general process. Not all of these steps occur in every boundary adjustment matter, but these are the steps to keep in mind as you're thinking about what happens in a boundary adjustment case. There's always an initial filing that starts the case, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute. The Office of Administrative Hearings strongly encourages mediations and for local units of government to come to an agreement about what should happen next with regard to the boundary adjustment. Notice is an important component of the process to ensure that the public and those affected are aware of what's happening. In some but not all matters, there's a public hearing. And finally, an order from the administrative law judge identifying the boundary adjustment that was made or not made. Appeals, if they happen, go to the district court in the county in which most of the land is located. One of the services that the Office of Administrative Hearings provides, and this is really the good work of STAR and our administrative law judges, we have put up sample forms, petitions, and resolutions on our website to help property owners, cities, and towns find the right initiating documents for the type of case that they want to start. So all boundary adjustments start with the filing of a petition or resolution. And while this is all laid out in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 414, we also provide sample forms that are easily accessible on our website. And this table just shows the first of those. A filing fee is also required, which is set out in Minnesota rules. And again, here is just an image to show you the type of service we provide at OAH. We try to make sure that the filing fee information is clear and understandable. So you'll see here, for example, that an annexation of an entire town to a city has a filing fee of $200. The filing fees go back to the general fund. Now, as I mentioned before, OAH strongly encourages parties to resolve boundary matters through mediation. Mediation is mandatory in some types of matters like detachment. And 70% of all mediations at OAH, and that's across our entire jurisdiction of work, result in agreement by the parties. So while parties are free to contract with a private mediator of their choice, we really encourage municipalities and local governments to choose the Office of Administrative Hearings to provide mediation. So these are some of the good things, good value that people get from mediation here at OAH. Our rate is quite affordable, $215 an hour. And unlike many private mediators, we do not charge any cancellation fees. We don't have a minimum. We want people to resolve their conflicts and use the skills and resources of a judge's perspective to understand one another's perspective and hopefully bring people closer to the middle where they can reach an amicable resolution in an efficient and effective way. If we do have a hearing, those hearings are held in the county where most of the effective land is. Notice is really important, as I mentioned before. And here we're talking about notice in a local paper. So this is all about making sure the people in the locality know what's going on. So for example, our most recent notices were published in papers like the Prior Lake American and the Sun This Week in Dakota County. So we're really looking for those local papers to make sure folks know what's going on. Unlike a traditional court, any person may present facts or evidence at the hearing without becoming a party. Again, this is really about the goal that everybody have the opportunity to express their own viewpoint so that the judge can ultimately make a decision that's unbiased, transparent, and fairly applies Minnesota's law. I'd also note as an example of our commitment to access to the process, in a recent matter before Judge Palmer Denig during the pandemic, we held the hearing at a town hall and also broadcasted the hearing on GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting was the remote platform that people in that town were most familiar with because it's how the local government did its business. And so people who were interested in the hearing could come in person in a socially distant and safe way, but they could also participate through the broadcast on GoToMeeting. And this is just an example of our real commitment to making sure that people have access and can participate in this process. Now, if you're interested in knowing what's going on in your county, there's another great resource on our website. You'll find this map and you can click on any of those red dots to find the county of your interest. Here on the right-hand side, I'm showing you the first few entries that come up if you were to choose Dakota County. You'll see all of the boundary adjustment matters that have happened since Minnesota Statutes Chapter 414 was first passed into law in 1959. So if you look up Dakota County, you'll find 8 pages of entries. September 2020 is the most recent resolution date the matter was resolved, and November 1959 is the oldest. We think this is a really important a source of public information. It supports individuals and landowners. It supports local units of government. It also supports practitioners who are serving clients in these matters. If you click on the main docket record number, I've circled just one in red as an example, you'll get all kinds of more details about that particular docket number. Star Holman tells me that if you're looking from the 1980s forward, a great deal of information is there. If you're looking all the way back to 1959, we've published as much as we can, but you might have to go to the Minnesota History Center for the rest. Now, moving on specifically to annexations. So annexation, again, is when property from a township or unorganized territory is made part of a city. And there are a number of types of annexations that can happen. One type is by ordinance. Another is referred to as an orderly annexation. Some annexations happen by an administrative law judge's order. And then there's a concurrent detachment annexation, which is when a parcel is detached from one city and annexed to another. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about these four. Now, know that just like any area of law, there are always exceptions and nuances. So I'm going to walk you through these four in a high level. And then if you have questions, we'll certainly stand for questions and hope that we can answer what you want to know. Annexation by ordinance is how most annexations are accomplished. City councils pass an ordinance declaring certain land to be part of the city. For example, city-owned land that is abutting the city, or land that's completely surrounded by the city, might be appropriate for annexation by ordinance. The city must file copies of the ordinance with the Office of Administrative Hearings, the town clerk, the county auditor, and the Secretary of State. And unless the city owns the land, it must also serve notice of intent to annex on the town board, all owners of the land to be annexed, and all landowners with contiguous area to be annexed. And the city at times must also hold a public hearing before they move forward with passing the ordinance. The annexation doesn't become effective until the administrative law judge approves the filing, which means in these cases, our judges make sure that all of the statutory steps were taken in an appropriate way before approving the annexation. An orderly annexation is an annexation by agreement. Now, these kinds of annexations are a binding contract between the participants, for example, a city and a town. The terms of the agreement could include an immediate annexation of an area, so an annexation that's happening right now, or it could be used for a future annexation, some kind of land use planning that the city and town are engaged cooperatively in together.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. This is Representative Elkins. Cheryl Joachim is trying to get back into the meeting. Mr. Strohmeyer, can you perhaps let her in? I'm sorry. Sorry for the interruption. Go ahead.
Okay. At least 10 days before the city and town adopt the orderly annexation agreement, a notice must be published in the local paper. So again, we see that notice to the public is an important component of the process. And if you're interested in looking at the kinds of detail that are included in these binding contracts, again, you can find a great resource on our website. We include a searchable database of agreements in orderly annexations. So you can see the kinds of work that towns and cities do together to support an orderly annexation. A concurrent detachment and annexation occurs when property is simultaneously detached from one city and annexed to another. It can be initiated by resolution of both cities, or by petition by the property owner and resolution from one of the two cities. If both cities don't agree, Here is a moment where an administrative law judge would hear the case and order the annexation if it's in the best interest of the cities and the property owner. Now, if other types of annexations do not apply, an annexation can be approved by an administrative law judge after a hearing. This is a rare situation, but it can happen. These matters are initiated by a city, a town, a city and a town together, or a group of property owners. And here again, the administrative law judge applies a best interest analysis that is set out in Minnesota law. Now, this is just a snapshot of today's pending docket. You'll see that we have four pending cases that are annexation by ordinance, two that are orderly annexations, or those annexations by contract or agreement, and we don't have any matters pending that are annexations by judge's order. These six pending cases involve 434 acres of land. So this is just a snapshot of today. We can also look at a summary of annexations throughout the past fiscal year 20. And here you'll see that we have half and half annexations by ordinance and orderly annexations, 56 each. Four of those concurrent kinds of matters, and again, no annexation by judge's orders matters occurred in fiscal year 20. Again, this is just a view of those searchable databases that I talked about and the specific website to our municipal boundary unit. And just a reminder that we're here to assist in understanding and to provide information. We have sample documents and we really pride ourselves in the resources we make available. That's all. I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and then I'm happy to take questions, though please know I will rely on Star Holman and Judge Palmer Dedding for the nitty-gritty of things.
Representative Mason, you're muted.
I'm sorry. The last statistics were interesting, where it was like half and half, because I guess I was thinking more often that it would be by orderly annexation. Representative Hewitt has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick thought here, Judge. What's your opinion on legal publications? I see that was brought up, and with the internet being so prevalent to where we get our information now, and very few people are actually getting those papers, do you feel that that's something we need to change in the future? I mean, are you feeling the I think people that know to go there for this item are there, but it's also meant as a common public posting. Is this something we should probably revisit?
Madam Chair, Representative. So I guess what I want to say to you is we know that times are changing, right? The Office of Administrative Hearings a year ago only heard 2% of our cases on a remote platform, and that was by telephone. Today, we're holding almost 90% of our cases on a remote platform. And like I said, always creating some kind of space for access, either in person or other means, to make sure that everybody has access. I think I would say to your question, if that's something that you're interested in, I would really encourage you to seek the thoughts of the public. I think it's hard to predict where everybody is getting their information. There's just a lot of different sources. And those local papers are still identified as the place of legal notice for lots of matters, right? That's a place where service, for example, in matters that go to the judicial branch's district court, if you can't find service, publication in a paper is often a legally permissible manner. And so I would say that I don't have an opinion other than to be very cautious and careful about the choices you make with regard to notice, because it is such an essential component of due process and supporting due process for everyone involved.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Judge. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, perhaps we could go to our testifiers and the first testifier that I would call would be Craig Johnson from the League of Cities. And just so that you know, each side will be getting like 5 to 10 minutes to make their presentations. And then after we hear from both sides, then I'll open it up for questions again. Mr. Johnson, identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I will be splitting the city portion of time with Elizabeth Weffel from the firm of Flaherty and Hood, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. So I'm going to go first here. Very much appreciate the opportunity to be in front of the committee to discuss this horribly controversial but very important issue. To give you a little bit of background on it from a city perspective, the chief judge gave an excellent summary of this. It is very complex. There are many different instances that come up. Just the statistics for the last year are a good example. And as the chair mentioned, that half of them were done by orderly annexation and half were done through an ordinance. Well, there's a reason for that that I'll get to a little bit later. But let me back up first and talk about why cities get involved in this issue at all. And I think it was laid out very well in one of the slides from the Office of Administrative Hearings, where it listed the three purposes for boundary adjustment. And those were laid out pretty clearly, that one is to help cities grow in an efficient and productive manner. Second is to make sure that we are protecting rural and open spaces in an appropriate manner. And the third was to make sure that municipal government is done as efficiently as possible. And so that's the types of things that are looked at when an annexation is raised. And I thought that was very well laid out in the presentation you all just saw. And it comes up for many different reasons. One of the reasons for large annexations is often either that there is very clearly identified large growth coming to a community, and there's going to be a need for property on which to do that. There's only so much you can build within a certain number of acres in a city. And when that's full, you need to be able to look at how else you can grow. It might be for an industrial park. It might be for new housing. It could be for a number of different reasons. Public services are often a reason where we are expanding and need a school or a hospital or a fire station. And the only place that there's enough space to do that is on the edge of the existing city. And so it comes up for those types of reasons. It also comes up because property owners who live next to the city see an opportunity and they wish to develop their property in a way that they think would work better if they were part of the municipality. That often means that they would like to have water and sewer and stormwater services extended to the property that they're trying to develop. And so they work to be annexed so that those city services are extended to that area. Obviously, you can develop it much more densely. If you have water, sewer, and stormwater services, you can put more development in the same acreage, which is the whole point of developing in an urban or suburban manner, which is what the statute refers to as what is appropriate to be annexed, is any development that is urban or suburban in character. I would say that both townships and cities work very, very hard to stress that orderly annexation is the way we want to resolve differences over annexation. The reason there are, well, to stop with that, it's by far the best way to do it. It means people are communicating. It takes time. It takes negotiation. These are always controversial changes because it's two elected bodies of government trying to decide how best to represent the people that live within them. And everybody's doing their best to do that. So we very strongly encourage that the work necessary for that occur any place where there are differences. But there is a very large category of annexations that don't require that and are done much more efficiently through the petition process mentioned by the judge. If a property is less than 200 acres and meets several other criteria in statute, the property owner can simply petition to be annexed into the city. And that's why you see so many of those in the last calendar year, is a lot of annexations are smaller acreages, and it's a single property owner or two who are asking to be annexed to a city that they're next to. And that, rather than go through the time and the acreage fees and all of the costs that come in through working an orderly annexation, can be done simply by that property owner petitioning the city. And if the city is willing to pass an ordinance supporting that, it then just goes to the Office of Boundary Adjustments to be determined if it's appropriate or not. And so I think to the earlier question by the chair of why are there so many? It's because a lot of the ones done in the last year were probably pretty small because of the type of year we were having. And that they were probably cases where it was a single property owner trying to get a small amount added on to the city that they live next to. I would add that another reason, as I mentioned earlier, that there are a lot of annexations that happen is because of environmental services. I can speak to that because, as many of you know, that's the primary area I represent cities, is on environmental and land use issues. And we often see developments that occur and then later, after 15 years, the water that was put in, the private wells on every house, the septic systems that were put in privately on every property start to fail. And the difficulty or costs of repairing those and keeping those up or finding new water if your well starts going dry or getting filled with sand, many times the decision will be, you know what, we should be annexed to the neighboring city so we can get water and sewer. And that is where you will see the longer discussions, the harder discussions, and frequently the need for an orderly annexation agreement to get it resolved. And in some cases, very rare, but very controversial when they happen, the need for the Office of Boundary Adjustments to actually adjudicate a solution when an orderly annexation can't be reached. Everyone tries to avoid those. They're so expensive, it's just mind-boggling, and it's very difficult. But they do happen once in a while. I guess with that, given the time limits that the committee would like to stick to at this point, I would just say thank you again to everyone and turn it over to Elizabeth Weffel. I will be here throughout the hearing for further questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Weffel?
Thank you. And thank you to the committee for allowing us to speak here today. What I want to do is actually, I think the best way to understand this may be to think about or talk about some examples of where annexation has happened and why it happened. So I'm going to give you three different annexations involving, you know, different types and different situations. The first one I want to talk about is in Olivia. Olivia is west of the Twin Cities. And some of you may have driven through it, but it had a hospital that was landlocked in the middle of the city. And, you know, Olivia is a thriving city, and it was very clear it needed to upgrade this hospital to meet the medical needs, not just of the city, but of the surrounding communities, because it was going to be designated as a regional trauma center. The challenge is that there was no place to build such a facility within the town. So, you know, they did the studies, and land was identified that was on the edge of town where the city would be able to serve it with utilities and would be able to expand the hospital as needed in the future. Now, this is exactly the type of development that needs to be in a city, because it clearly needs city services. It needs roads. It needs the wastewater, the drinking water. And so in this situation, the city manager and others sat down with the township and helped them understand the need to modernize this hospital and the benefits that it would provide to the entire area. And so they were able to, you know, work with the township, reach an agreement, and made it happen. Now, this is, you know, it was a success in Olivia. And I have to say, this is a story you will see in a lot of places in greater Minnesota because of that need to upgrade medical facilities and the fact that, you know, a lot of these hospitals were built within cities and no longer have, you know, room to expand. If you were to drive down Highway 10, you know, towards Detroit Lakes, start paying attention. You'll see it at Perham. You'll see it at Staples. Wadena right now is working on expanding their medical campus. So this is, a common thing that happens because, you know, these communities, there are a lot of communities in greater Minnesota that are thriving, but they need medical facilities, and the only places that they can grow are on the edge of town. You know, and most times, again, they try to work out those agreements, you know, do it in an orderly fashion. Oftentimes, like I said, like Craig said, you know, the property owners, you know, will agree to it. Want to talk about a second type where you see it. I don't know how familiar you all are all with Highway 14 and how it runs into, I shouldn't say runs, sort of runs, you know, along, you know, North Mankato and Mankato. You know, in those two cities themselves, North Mankato and Mankato are, you know, they're like a mini twin cities that they're right next to each other. So to expand, they sort of have to go in the other direction. Well, about 10 years ago, the city of North Mankato, MnDOT, and Nicollet County partnered together to construct a new $20 million interchange along Highway 14, which was the western border of North Mankato. Now, the whole goal with this interchange was to promote economic development and housing in a growing part of the city, you know, and it was adjacent to the city limits. So what happened is as they built this and after it was built, they saw and continue to see landowners of adjacent property to this interchange petition to be annexed so that that land could be developed for industry and other purposes. You know, and we'll admit that on some of these, you know, the township has expressed concern, but, you know, the whole goal with this economic development project that all of these parties invested $20 million in and more was that there would be growth. And without that annexation and the development that followed, it really would have been a waste of taxpayer money to do this interchange. But it really is, if you've driven out there, it has really been a thriving, you know, developing part of, you know, Mankato, and North Mankato has been just one of the strong growth areas of the state, and it's been done well. You know, they've been paying attention to the environment and other things. So it's been really, you know, a good project that's happened. Another example I want to talk about is these situations where you have several cities close to each other and how they, you know, can work out the orderly annexation agreement, because sometimes you will be sort of in a region where cities are pretty close, you know, they can be close together and they both may want to, you know, both may have their eyes on that same property. And this is up in Moorhead, again, one of the sort of thriving and growing areas out in greater Minnesota. And, you know, Moorhead and Dilworth are sister cities. They're pretty close together. And, you know, a few years ago, there was a disagreement about a parcel of land that was situated between these two cities. So what they ended up doing was, you know, working together with those two cities and the township to achieve orderly annexation boundary agreements, which, you know, the cities and the townships have considered successful. And it was a long-term solution, you know, for those, it was three parties, if you think about it. It was two cities and the township sort of working out how in this area, you know, that's near Fargo-Moorhead, again, very growing, sort of respectfully develop. So those are, you know, some of the recent examples of, you know, where annexation is happening, how it's happening. You know, other situations like Craig has mentioned, you know, I'm familiar with this because we spent a couple of years trying to make sure they had money for it. But like down in Austin, you know, there was housing development that occurred outside the city. But the challenge was that they weren't able to, you know, annex it into the city originally. And so there was a housing development that occurred on the edge. Then we started having failing septic systems. And when that happens, you know, at some point the city had to step up and say, look, this is going to be really expensive, but we need to, you know, we can't have basically, I mean, it was the septic systems were failing into bodies of water that then flowed elsewhere. It was creating a lot of problems. So the city of Austin had to step up and annex it. And then it became even a further process where we had to spend several years, you know, trying to get money into the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, state money, then to try and backfill and do, you know, the environmental work that, you know, could have been done earlier and for much less money if, you know, if there had been a planned annexation there and if things would have been done in advance. You know, so that's one of those examples of why it's important, you know, to be thinking about how, you know, cities are going to grow, you know, whether we want to, you know, that or not. Our population is growing. These developments are going to happen. It's really important to think forward on these and make sure that it's done. And I think that's, you know, a real great recent example of why it's important. So those are my examples for today. I could, you know, go down the list, but I think those might be the sort of most clear, relevant examples of reasons why annexation happens. So thank you again to the committee.
Thank you. That was helpful. Next, the township perspective, Steve Fenske from the Minnesota Association of Townships. Again, if you would just identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mason. Steve Fenske with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Can you hear me okay before I go further?
You're fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today. Townships have a different perspective on this. And it's because it's their municipality's boundaries that are being taken, okay? There are a lot of good reasons for annexation, but there are some bad reasons for annexation. To take some things and clear them up, the water issues that you've heard about, those I don't think are an issue. Those the MPCA is usually involved in. It makes good sense to get those cleaned up in some way. To clarify something, when a development happens, it doesn't have to be in a city. Development can happen in townships, just as you can have some rural settings within cities. You see that too. So this is not black and white here in the way it's maybe been portrayed. Likewise, city services can certainly be extended outside the boundaries of a city. Okay, there are other solutions to this than annexation. And what this usually comes down to is tax base. This is who gets the tax revenue. Okay. If I can, I'm going to try and share my screen here, but if not, we sent a handout to the committee that explains some things about annexation. I'm going to refer to this a little bit, but first, what you may have heard in the past from our association is an attempt to basically bring annexation fairness. The thing that we've been talking about for several years now is the case that Chair Mason referred to earlier. It was a case that the city of Duluth and a township agreed to terms of annexation, how annexation would happen. That township decided when they were annexed, they wanted to be part of Duluth, and they're bordered on three sides by different cities, okay? They purposely didn't want to be with those other cities. They decided as a community, they wanted to be part of Duluth. The difficulty there was that the city of Proctor wanted some of the township. To some degree, a sense of entitlement to growth among cities. And of course, metro cities, you don't see that. You have what you have and you have to make do with that. In this case, that ended up in the Supreme Court. Proctor ultimately got what they wanted, but one of the things that became clear is you can have cities working against cities in this process. That's a problem. You can have towns and cities that in good faith negotiate something and then a third party comes in and grabs something out of it. Okay. Now in our chart, I'll go to the second page here, that annexation by contract. This chart lays out the different methods of annexation, okay? That annexation by contract is here, orderly annexation, you've heard about that. This is really one of the only means towns have to try and regulate how they're going to be annexed. And that's why we've talked to legislators about it. But the difficulty here is if they don't reach an agreement, cities still have annexation by ordinance. And it's been talked about as one power, but it's not. It's seven powers. Okay, there's seven different ways, different means that a city could annex property from a township into the city. A city's not going to bargain against their interest, of course. So if they can't get an agreement that they want, you're going to see annexation by ordinance. And Chair Mason, earlier you mentioned during Chief Judge's presentation, you saw a lot of annexation by ordinance. That is the case. We see a lot of annexation by ordinance. And I'm not going to go through the entire chart here, but what I want to point out is there's largely not a chance for townships to object. Or if you do get to object, it has to go to a contested case. It can cost a lot of money. The other piece of this is there's not necessarily, in all of these, a chance for landowners to have a say. Some of them have landowner input, and that makes some sense. The first one, 120 acres in the first column there, that usually means the landowner wants to go into the city, they want to develop. Townships, by and large, understand that. They're not going to try and stand in the way of that. But a couple of these powers, they don't have anything to do with land use. They don't have something to do with, is it about to be developed? And in particular, if you look at the fifth and sixth column there, 60% surrounded and surrounded. Those two types of annexation sometimes result in cities taking property that's going to remain farm or it's going to remain bare. It's not planned for development and the owners may not want to develop it, but they can take it anyway. Okay. These are some of the problems we see with annexation. And the chief judge also mentioned the detachment process. When we see annexation and the city doesn't develop it, there's no opportunity for the township itself to have a like power to say, well, it's been a while and it's not developing. We'd like to pull that back into the township. We see a fair amount of property that is sitting there. Maybe it was, they had hoped it would develop, but it hasn't. In those cases, townships would like to say, hey, this shouldn't have really moved at the city into the city at that time. We'd like it back into the township until it is ready to develop. This is a difficult issue for townships. And it's been mentioned, it's a can of worms. It is, but there's opportunities to create fairness. The chief judge mentioned annexation has been around for a very long time, which is true, but it has not been done in this way for all of that time. And the past ways that it has been done gave more emphasis to having the parties agree or having to have landowners have input. At times they had a vote, they no longer have a vote. So we believe that this can be done in a different way and a more fair way that results in sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. But right now townships genuinely feel that the best they can hope for is in an orderly agreement where they're still going to get annexed over time. With that, Chair Mason, I know you're on a tight schedule here, so I think I'll leave it there if there's questions.
Okay, thank you very, very much. Let's see, I'm going to see if we have any questions. And maybe while I'm checking on the others, I have a question. Is it, and anyone can answer this, is it normally that the whole township has to be annexed, or is it typically maybe just one property owner?
Most annexations, I think Ms. Weifel will agree, most are done piece by piece. They're not done as a whole township. Those are more rare.
Okay.
I'll defer to Craig. Craig looked like he's jumping on that.
Madam Chair, members Mr. of the Johnson. Committee totally agree that that it would typically be a small portion that would be done at a time. Typical would be what a property owner wants to be working on to develop something of that size, rather than a large area. Those are the less common ones, but the ones that cause the Township Association and the City Association to get to play together at legislative hearings again.
Okay, let me follow through. Okay, so you've got one property owner that wants to join a city or be annexed, but the township, for some reason, would they normally oppose this? Typically not, they would just let the property owner proceed.
Most often they let it proceed. Occasionally, if the planned development is something that the town is concerned about, they don't want to see that particular development, then they may object to it. But by and large, these go through pretty well, and they're not all contentious. Many of them, you know, they're not like necessarily, but many of them go through without any of us having to get involved, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Finsky. Representative Elkins, I see your hand.
Representative Olson has his hand up as well. I just wanted to know if Mr. Finsky could make his chart available to us.
Mr. Finsky?
Yes, Representative Elkins. You mean to share it on the screen or to send the chart out?
Send it to us as well so we have it as a reference.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. And is there any follow-up, Representative Elkins, or is that?
No, I think Representative Olson has his hand up as well.
Okay, sounds good. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Chair Mason. I think it's important to understand that when we're talking about like detachment from cities, so I've experienced the detachment myself. My small little town, we annexed some property many years ago and then nothing happened with it for a really long time. And what generally is the case is that if this is just agriculture land, the valuation of it in accordance with what the tax base is for the city as opposed to a township is much heavier. So we actually were threatened a lawsuit by the landowners basically saying, you're going to detach this land. We're going to give you $10,000 or we're going to see you in court because the amount of money that we were taking in as a city was many times more than what they would have paid to the township. So if a city is not utilizing their properties or utilizing the land that they've annexed, it's just a tax hog. That's all it was for. And that's how we kind of looked at it and said, you know, all we're doing is taking tax money from these property owners.
Thank you. I was wondering how many, if there's anybody else on the committee that has experience, if that might be helpful to know as well. Okay, I am not, let's see, there's one more hand up. Oh, Ms. Weffel.
Thank you. I had wanted to answer one of the earlier questions you had regarding, you know, the annexations where the landowner wants to get in. And I do think it's important because it keeps getting brought up is that Proctor Duluth Midway case, in that situation, you know, it was a property owner who had land adjacent to the city of Proctor who wanted it developed. And that was how that annexation, you know, happened, was that, you know, it was Proctor had not been a party to that orderly annexation agreement because they were never given the opportunity. And I think that, you know, the challenge in that case is that, you know, that orderly annexation agreement was done is basically, you know, an annexation, you know, an agreement not to annex. And so that property was going to develop. You know, the owners wanted to be part of that city. They wanted to use, you know, that land because it wasn't, you know, right abutting Duluth. They wanted to be part of the city so they could get the city services, you know, and in those situations with orderly annexation agreements, in those situations they really should be looking to a model more like what Moorhead did with Dilworth, where they recognize, you know, when you've got, you know, these close cities that are, you know, are growing, that there's not just an interest between the city and the township, but there's also, you know, that other city whose rights must also be recognized, again, for the efficient delivery of service, you know, for the environment and other issues. I think that's really important to recognize that with the orderly annexation agreements, if you're ignoring one of the other cities that has an interest, it's not a fair agreement.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the toughest part with this is you're talking to the main part is individuals and neighbors. And we all know that sometimes you get along with the neighbors and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you agree and sometimes you don't. And how do you legislate common sense and fairness in all cases? And it's a challenge. And I worry about the common sense of you get a township, they have roads and other infrastructure they maintain, same for cities. And when you do it, the property owner should be a primary concern. But I think that proximity and adjacent neighbors should have a voice or standing because you don't do things in a vacuum. And this is such a messy area because it gets down to oftentimes squabbles between neighbors, whether it's municipality and township or physical neighbors. And any member of the committee or citizen that has ideas of how to improve this, I welcome them. The caveat is there's great resistance to opening up any related statutes because of the unintended consequences that might roll forth. So I've enjoyed the testimony and the input, and I just fear that this will never be less messy unless we have a miraculous thing happen and we find a way of improving the code that allows consideration and compassion for the neighborhood. But I enjoyed the testimony and look forward to that miracle happening and fixing all of these messy, difficult situations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any responses to that? Okay. Seeing none, I'm not seeing any other questions. Okay. So in that case, you know, I do want to thank our guest today. We all know that this is a very controversial area. And I just wanted us, you know, the committee to have a chance to learn as much as we could without having any type of bill before us and knowing what the landscape looks like. So unless there's any last comments and not seeing any hands raised, this meeting is adjourned. And again, thank you, everybody. Have a good day.